From Glitch HQ on Riverside Avenue in encumbered, mischievous Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, a show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development.
I'm Martha McGarry, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Croy, I too make nice games.
And hey, I'm Alan Burns Johnson, and I also make nice games. In this episode, your nice hosts talk about what we did on our winter break. Spoiler, we worked on Widget Satchel. And so if everyone is ready...
let's start. Whoa, Alan. Wow, first try, great time.
I was so nervous about ending it right before the song.
That was like perfect.
And I said encumbered. I totally said encumbered.
You did. You did. I heard it. Did y'all hear that?
Address your fan letters too.
Contact at nicegames.com.
So Ellen, why did you take over our show just now?
You asked me to do the intro.
Ellen, you gotta keep the fiction going.
So if I didn't, an anvil would fall on the building.
Yeah.
And were there other reasons that we made
No, that was pretty much okay. Well, Ellen, you're here because you spent the last couple of months with us on, well, we were on hiatus working on Widget Satchel. In fact, you were part of the Widget Satchel team before we decided to go on hiatus. It was when Martha joined the Widget Satchel team that we decided to go on hiatus.
It's my fault.
Right. So for listeners who have no idea what we're talking about, we've been back with new episodes for a week or two. Mm-hmm. But at the end of 2018, we took 8 weeks and we just put out reruns. And they seemed to go over pretty well, but yeah. It was important for us because all of your nice hosts, as well as Ellen, were all on the Widget Satchel team. And we're trying to finish Widget Satchel.
Yes.
And so in this episode, we're going to talk about what we did on our winter break, which is basically Widget Satchel, and anything else that we happened in the meantime, and what our hiatus was. But mostly, we're going to talk about Widget Satchel.
Yeah, yeah. I guess just like a top of the news sort of thing.
Yeah.
Treasure's Deck is coming out soon.
Yeah.
A game I'm getting paid to work on. I don't have any details on release dates or anything like that, but just look forward to it. We'll announce it sometime very soon.
Can you say you all the platforms have been announced, right? Or is there that last one that
hasn't? I'm not sure. I'd rather not.
Okay.
It's going to be on Switch, right?
Yes.
There's a trailer for that.
Yeah. So definitely, if y'all got a Switch, look forward to that.
It's a super cool puzzle game. Mm-hmm. Steven's been working on it for half a year?
Over half a year.
Yeah.
Almost two-thirds. Something like that.
Wrapping it up and getting out that door.
Yeah.
Feeling good, right?
Yeah. I'm feeling really good.
That's awesome. Woo.
Really looking forward to it.
I got some news. I'm going to be teaching kids about game design.
Cool.
Awesome.
Which is kind of a great opportunity that came up. Our friend and yours, Troy Strand, who's was a teacher at Venture Academy, which is a public charter school here in Minneapolis. He put out a notice that, hey, anyone interested in teaching this game design course as an after school program for kids at the school? And I said, you know, I could do that. And so I met with them and it seemed like a good fit. And so I'm now putting together an 8-week program to teach 6 to 11 or 12 maybe graders about game design. And there's also going to be a separate program for coding. So I can focus really on game design. What makes game design different from other software design? And I can show great examples. I've already got these great ideas for paper prototype examples. I'm going to teach them about playtesting, about prototyping. Oh, it's going to be so much fun.
Oh, I'm so excited. Can I take the class?
I was going to say, I want to take the class.
Yeah.
Well, check back with me and see, because these kids might just beat me down.
Oh,
no.
I might just end up assigning them Nice Games Club episodes at homework.
Sweet new listeners.
Yeah. Right. That's the only reason I said yes to this, is to get a bunch of new listeners. Hook them young, right?
Yeah.
So I'm quite excited for it. I mean, it's a weird time for me to be doing this because, as we'll get into, Widget Satchel is in the home stretch now. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of the wrong time for me to be devoting any of my time to anything else. But it seemed like a really good opportunity. And it's something that I want to do. And I feel like a lot of times when you're an artist or when you're a maker, you're a creator, a lot of times you don't know what good you are in the world. Mm. And sometimes I have that feeling. And so I want to, like, this is an opportunity for me to actually matter to somebody. So it's a little weird. And maybe that's more depressing than I mean it. But like, it's, I've always felt that when you know something, you should share it.
Yeah.
And so this is an opportunity for me to do that in a way that I've never had before. So, I'm going to put a lot of my energy into it. I'm going to take it really seriously. And I hope,
having known you for so long, Mark, I think that like, this is going to be really good for you, because like, you really love giving people information, having them learn things that you learn, that so they can improve themselves.
Right. Listeners will know how much I like to talk about things.
Not how I meant. But I mean, like, I think that's very fulfilling for you.
Yeah.
So like, that's good that you get to provide that.
Yeah. People. I'm really jazzed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'll let you know how it goes.
Also, that we'll talk about this later in the episode, but you're a good teacher.
Oh, thank you.
So I think, I mean, people talk about how teenagers can be challenging to deal with, but no, I mean, they're choosing to be part of a program. They're really passionate about it. And it's really cool to be able to share your passion with someone who's learning it and will have crazy cool ideas.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to meeting these kids, finding out the group of them, and seeing what they want, you know? And I want to be really flexible to say, like, what do you want to get out of this, and how can I give that to you?
Yeah.
Instead of saying, like, this is the program I think everyone should know or whatever.
Yeah.
It's because, and the thing, too, is I was talking to somebody else about this, and they were saying, like, oh, I would never tell anyone to be a game dev. It would ruin their lives. And I'm a multidisciplinary artist, so I see knowledge as different from trade. And so the thing I want to impart is, like, you know, if you want to be a game designer, these are the tools you need. But if you want to be anything else, this will help you too.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been a believer of taking, you know, the sort of cross-disciplinary knowledge, and like, learning something about something isn't purely for that thing.
Yeah.
You can apply it elsewhere.
Yeah.
And so hopefully, whether they decide to ruin their lives as a game designer or not, I'll have given them something.
Yeah. That's a very true lesson that I'm glad that people are going to be learning. Not the game design thing, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, you know, on this show, we have a number of listeners who are not game designers, or maybe they have ambitions but are not currently in it. And I find that fascinating. It's sometimes like, well, what are they getting out of it? I hope they're getting something, right? I hope we're entertaining, if nothing else.
Yes. Sure. Mm-hmm. Cool. So we worked on this game.
We did.
We did the thing. You did the thing.
Uh-huh.
Good job.
Good transition there.
That's our show.
Welcome back.
We worked on Widget Satchel. Specifically, like, we did over these. This has been 8 weeks?
We've been on hiatus for 8 weeks.
Okay.
This push has been going on a little longer, but it roughly lines up.
Yeah, okay. So what we've been doing during this push is we took time off from Ice Games Club to work on Widget Satchel, and we grabbed Ellen and Martha to help us along the way, which is great. I think that was a wonderful decision. I'm glad you all are here.
It felt like a good idea at the time.
Yeah.
But people, you have no idea how good an idea it was.
The sentence ended that way.
Yeah. I was going to be like, wow, burn.
And we find out on this podcast.
Now the game is all but feature complete. I'm using that phrase wrong. But, I mean, we've got like almost all the content in, right? And it's largely just like bugs and a bunch of passes we need to go past.
Yes.
Go through.
Yeah.
So we're in a really good state now,
mm-hmm.
due to this hiatus.
Yeah.
But I think it's important for us to talk about like why we decided to take the time off instead of just, you know, working on it on the side while we're doing Nice Games Club. I wanted to like get a good push in there because like we were making pretty good progress with Widget Satchel in the past, but like, it was going to take longer than we would have liked if we were to just keep going at the pace we were going. So we wanted to put more effort into it. But
we'd sort of, I had set some internal goals and we kept missing them.
Yeah.
In a way that wasn't because we were doing anything wrong.
Right.
It's because we didn't know enough when we set the goals.
Yeah.
And I think that's true of a lot of projects. I was sort of yelling this at you in the previous episode.
Yeah.
You set a date and then missing it is not the failure,
mm-hmm.
right? It's the not setting it in the first place.
Yeah.
And so we did that and then we'd say, well, what could we do to make our next estimate better?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, a little bit more of a regular schedule, a little bit more, and frankly, a little bit more time devoted.
Yeah.
That we thought we could give.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, then we talked about it and thought it was a good idea and did it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we just had to figure that out, and we decided that as much as we loved doing Nice Games Club, we needed to put some more time into Widget Satchel, so we decided to spend more time of it on that.
Yeah, and it was hard because I know, Martha, you were saying you wanted fewer weeks off because you didn't want to get rusty, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been feeling it the past couple episodes we've been recording.
And I know that the argument I made was that it's if it does hurt the show a little bit, I felt that as long as we, you know, eyes open, mm-hmm. I felt that Widget Satchel was important enough to maybe, you know, steer Nice Games Club off the rails just a hair. I'd like to think we did okay, like, that we're now that we're back, we'll see how listeners feel.
Yeah.
But it felt like you can only give so much time.
Yeah.
And so you have to decide what that time goes to. Mm-hmm. And so, but we tried to balance it, right? We weren't going to take, I think any further time off would have been a bad idea. Mm-hmm. I think we stretched it as far as was reasonable.
Yeah. And I mean, it's all the better for it because now we're in such a good place now with Widget Satchel. Mm-hmm. Like it was definitely worth the time.
Yes.
To do it, to take that time.
Yeah.
To figure that out.
And there are still deadlines. There's still things to do, mm-hmm. but it feels like we can go back to our previous lives, and not that we're like going fully back to, you know, to the old schedule, but like it's not as much of a burden as we set upon ourselves.
Yeah.
For this time.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. It's probably important for us to talk about like what we do.
Yeah.
In the game. So Mark,
roll call.
So Mark, you did. All of the art for Widget Satchel?
Every little bit.
Yeah.
Except for a couple of particle effects.
Ah, okay. Aside from the particle effects, did everything.
Yeah.
Which is, and the game has a lot of art, y'all. So it is no small task.
It's funny, like the in-game art, mm-hmm. the level art, and the character art mostly was done over the summer, mostly yeah. finished. The art I've been doing in the last couple months and during this thing has been mostly UI stuff. Mm. Refreshing old bits, adding new things, like checking off stuff that we always meant to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, when it's funny when you say like I did all the art, I'm like, sure, what's the problem with that? But it isn't. I guess it is kind of unusual.
Yeah. Well, also, I guess all of the projects I work on, like people split tasks. Like it's not just one person doing all. Even in Fingence,
yeah.
like Lane does some of the art.
Mm-hmm.
And I do very minor things. So, like, yeah, it's not just one person, but, like, you have just done all of it,
yeah.
which I think is huge. Oh, and you're also, like, lead developer on the project. You've added a lot of tools and stuff to make our jobs easier.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think as you reel off my tasks, you'll find I am the major force of this project, but mostly because I've taken time off from my career to do this. Mm-hmm. You guys are all trying to find time apart from your day job, so it's actually harder for you guys to devote, whereas it actually ends up being, even though I'm doing more work, I think it's probably more of a stress on you guys. At least that's the sense I've, maybe you guys can each speak to that, but that's the sense I've gotten. And so the fact that, yeah, that I've done a big majority of it doesn't feel like an over, like more than makes sense.
Okay.
I suppose.
Yeah.
And then like a lot of it is because, I am very much used to working alone.
Mm.
And so I think there's probably a something to be said about like, maybe I didn't need to do all of this, but I developed a system and a workflow that was only this efficient because I was doing a lot of it. Mm. I'm perfectly open to that either as an analysis or as a criticism.
Mm.
It's been interesting because I've gotten so much about for this project about being a little larger of a team than yeah. I'm used to, but I think old habits die hard, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And as for myself, I do some code in Widget Satchel. Right now, my job is mainly bug fixing. Yeah.
But a lot of that is yeah. because it's like it's a game feel, right?
Yeah,
it's right. Character motion,
yep.
Enemy interaction. Yep. That's been your main thing. Is mm-hmm. like the actual like moment to moment experience of playing Widget Satchel,
which is,
has been a big part of your development process.
That's what I love doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's been great to do. And also like I added some features and stuff too. It wasn't just like game feel things, but like also like. Like we could talk about like the pillar launching thing. We added that in. Mm-hmm. I implemented a system for that and such. So it wasn't just bug fixing, but a lot yeah. of it is bug fixing too.
Widget Satchel consists of like components in the levels, right? Mm-hmm. So we have there's two types of characters. There's Sprocket, the character you play as, and then the bots that are the enemies in the game.
Yeah.
And there's multiple types of bots, but they're one object. And then the game consists of like mechanisms,
yeah.
lifts, belts, doors, pillars, like elements. And then those each have their own structure. Right. And then the game is designed by taking all those pieces and then putting them together into sections of, mm-hmm. of the game. Mm-hmm. And so each of those pieces has been, it's been really nice to be able to say to Steven, like, oh, take the pillar is yours.
Yeah.
Go ahead and work with it. Right. Yeah. Things have been relatively compartmentalized that way. And it's been easy to work, not on everything. Yeah. Right. There's some like things that interact with other things like the bots or Sprocket.
Right.
Those tend to be the most complicated and you make a little change and it affects a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
But a lot of the components, for the most part, you can dig into the code on those and they sort of live on their own. Mm-hmm. And it's within the level design that they interact. And that's been kind of nice. We've been able to move a little faster than you might think for a team this size
on
some of that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. In addition to that, I also work on some level design. So a few of the, I don't know if we've talked about it on the show, but like we have each level, there's five levels in Widget Satchel, and each level is made up of a bunch of different blocks of like, they're like chunks of the level.
Yeah, like chapters almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And the player may not even know when they move from one to the other, right. but a lot of them are segmented in a way that you sort of do a task, complete a challenge, and move to the next one.
Yep.
And so it contributes not just to our workflow, but the way the game plays.
Yeah. So like within each of these blocks, I made a few of, I made quite a lot of the levels, especially the earlier ones in the first three levels.
Yep.
But the newer ones, I didn't make as many of those, but I made some of those.
Right. Once we brought on our other level designers, it freed you up a little bit more to do more of the development stuff.
Mm-hmm. Which was good. Mm-hmm. And then additionally, like Mark said, I worked on some of the game feel and the game design stuff. So, implemented features or adjusted things as necessary to make sure that the game feels as good as it can possibly feel.
Yeah. The core mechanic of Widget Satchel is your character gets heavier when they pick up widgets.
Yes.
And so the jump changes. You move a little slower, and all that required a very complicated and sort of like elegant player controller system. We couldn't just get something off the shelf, and Steven mm-hmm. designed all of that.
Yes, I did. I did do that.
Gold star.
You did the thing.
I did the thing. And Martha, you want to talk about your role?
I joined late in the process, but I've been designing some blocks in the levels, mm-hmm. specifically level 4 and level 5, which has been really fun. And I've been forcing Mark to code a bunch of stuff. I'm like, I want to do this, but it doesn't work. So that's been really fun. It's been really fun not to ever touch code. So I know you wanted me to help with some of the code stuff.
I do want that. But I know you don't want that.
It's been really nice not to just be like, oh, I wanted this to work, and then be like, Mark, can't do it. And then
it's
or Steven, fix the bug.
Yeah. It's a different experience approaching it from that way, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cause then I can be more ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been actually quite nice when Martha just says, I want to do this. And you're not encumbered with the 8 months of us building the thing and like telling you why it's not possible.
Yeah.
You just say, let's do it. And then I think for half a second, but wait, no, okay, fine, let's do it. Like, it's been incredibly refreshing to have that. Like, Martha will just say, can we put this on that? And I'm like, well, I wasn't designed, but we totally could.
Yeah.
Because it's really easy to like set your own limitations.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really quite important, in fact, because mm-hmm. scope is a problem.
Yeah.
But sometimes you find someone who can like point at the corner of your possibility space and you realize that it's doable.
Yeah. And not just that, but like it was easy enough to implement that it wasn't even a problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad it wasn't a problem.
And as a result, there's those two sections level 4 that are some of the best platforming in the whole game.
Yeah.
And it's funny because Martha, you talked in our nicest episode about how you're not a platformer fan, but you fell in love with Celeste. And here we assigned you these blocks that were very platform specific, very no puzzle elements. And you just totally knocked it out of the park.
Huh.
It was really some of the best in the whole game. I'm really happy with those sections.
Mm-hmm. It was fun. I think I have to give up that moniker now.
Yeah.
But
Martha loves platformers. No. Put on a t-shirt. No.
Yeah.
I'd totally love to see a platformer you've done.
Maybe someday.
Add it to the list of projects.
Yes. I have so many projects. Anyway, so it's been really fun getting to design and like discipline every week, showing up and doing the thing, which isn't as bad as you might think. Like, I was a little worried about it, but like that was actually really good. So mm-hmm. Yeah,
cool.
Ellen,
do you want to talk about your role in the project?
Yeah, so I was also a level designer, and it was fun to just come up with ideas. I'm a designer in my day job, so I'm used to being able to say, hey, we can do this, and having the developers say, fine. But yeah, it was really cool. I hadn't done much in Unity before. So I learned a ton about how to work in the program.
Yeah.
And it learned a lot about the file structure and about developing in 2D and how to make cameras work, which was crazy. and I earned the title because of the level design work that I did of Explosion Czar.
Yep.
So you see an explosion. It's not all me, but you'll know. You'll know when it is.
Yeah, you will.
I feel like
explosions.
I think 80% of the kabooms in Widget Satchel are things you've designed.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're great.
It's quite a claim.
And also all your junk levels are great.
There's so much junk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you develop like junk in our game is just like pieces of junk you can just fling around. And
they're
stuff.
Just like piles of physics just, objects.
Yeah, that are, piles of physics objects.
They're meant to be like polish, the yeah. juice. They're just
things
fun.
You can throw around. Yeah, yeah, fun things. But Ellen developed like puzzles with them. We had never even considered that as an option. It's so great.
It's amazing. Yeah,
it is.
It's so much junk. It broke the physics.
It's true. I'm currently working on optimizing this particular section of Ellen's because there is too much junk in it. But at no point are we considering removing some of the junk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll take other features out of the game first.
Yeah. So I now kind of towards the end, when most of the game is feature complete and a lot of the content's in there, mm-hmm. Kind of moving on to doing some of the sound directing, working with Mark to figure out the sound effects.
Yeah.
And then,
that's the biggest thing in the game that we're probably the furthest behind on. We just sort of set it aside for later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so Ellen is sort of just taking on, like, she's going to be, yeah, directing that part of the experience. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm. And doing QA.
Yeah.
More stuff for the developers to do.
And how's that going? You've been playing through the first couple levels, right? And for QA, you've been like sort of noting all the things that we haven't caught yet. Right?
I think I'm taking kind of a more of a playtest approach to some of it right now, and sure. then I'm going to go back with a really fine tooth comb and find so much stuff for you guys to do. I'm so excited.
It's been like I was so worried, like, okay, it's all done, but like as we work on this thing, we'll go back to level two all the time mm-hmm. to like fix a thing, right? Yeah. And then we change the way the bots work a little bit, and suddenly there's the edge case in level three that we didn't consider.
Right.
And so it just happens a lot. And like as we get close to the finish line, and because I don't want it to be a long drawn out process, I don't want to do a ton of QA. I want to get it out, and I want to, but I also don't want to, you know, shortchange any of this process. I'm starting to think like, wait a minute, how much are we going to miss? Like, you know, and trying to keep it all in your head. And we've been trying to keep track of stuff. And so just having someone whose job it is to just check for that stuff, like, it's lightened my heart, you know?
Yeah. And I don't mean to imply that, you know, like the game isn't solid. It is just, that's part of what QA is.
Yeah. There's always things to find.
Right. There's always stuff to find. And especially since, you know, since your weight changes, and the way you move through the space changes in the game.
Yeah.
You have to check things a lot.
Mm. Yeah. Right. You're not just checking for bugs. You're checking for like design issues.
Yeah.
Like, hey, when I go through this part of the game, I'm likely to be in this weight class. And maybe Steven and I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the game doesn't play the way you thought it would play.
Right.
And so we need to do some redesigning of some stuff. Like, I'm fully expecting notes from you that are design focused, which is great because you came in when we were starting level four. And did a lot of work there, but now you had to put your stamp on some of that earlier stuff by way of telling us what we did wrong.
Don't hate me.
It's all important work. We need to get it done.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is, and you know, it's just such a fun game to play. Like, I was worried a little bit because I don't feel like I have a QA brain. I feel like there are some people who are just born to do QA.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like I have a QA brain, but the game is just so much fun to play. So I haven't reached a point where it feels like it's getting too redundant.
Good.
It's just fun to explore yeah. and hit junk and blow things up. Be a ferret.
Yes. Cool. In terms of like how long it took for us to get to get these two levels, we focused on the last two levels of the game really mm-hmm. during this push. I think it took us about when did we start this push?
I feel like the beginning of November was when we said these are the blocks we have left to do
yeah.
in levels 4 and 5.
Yep.
And by that point, Ellen, you had already finished the garbage pit you made for level 5. That was the first block you did, and that was done by then.
Yeah.
And I think we had one or two in level 4 that were done-ish or in some state, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the initial goal was to be at the end of November, we wanted to have the whole game at least like playable without it completely falling apart,
yeah.
Right? All the way to the end.
Yeah.
We didn't. None of the art needed to be in place. The game, the elements didn't need to be finished. You know, like if a section wasn't fully designed, you could just put a little like platform that you can just jump across for whatever. You know, that was the sort of thought we had.
Yeah.
But didn't quite go that way.
No, it didn't. What we ended up doing was we instead like finished up all of level 4, and then finished up most of level 5 at this point, and like we did them in chunks, right?
Yeah. So instead of doing level 4 and level 5 in a rough state to get a full playable thing, I think part of it is because we had like playtest events and stuff at the end, near the end of November. And it just occurred to us that like, why don't we just finish level 4 completely with all the art and all the polish?
Right. I think we just ended up having all the blocks we wanted for level 4. And we're like, why don't we just put these together and finish this up?
Yeah.
I think that was a lot of it.
It just felt in the moment that was the best thing to do. So it changed the way that the game was finished. Yeah. But weirdly, it didn't change the overall schedule of what we intended.
Yeah.
It sent me panicking a little bit because I'm like, oh, this isn't done. But all this other stuff is done we didn't expect to have done by now.
Yeah.
So it's sort of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it worked out. I think we finished level 4 around end of November. I was looking at some of the commits and our talks on Slack and stuff, and I think that's what I came to the conclusion. Yep. Not exactly sure. Mm-hmm. Level 5 is all but finished now too. We have just finished it.
Martha's making a noise over there.
Oh.
My block is the only one left.
There's one block left in the game, and Martha's got to do it, so lots of pressure.
My excuse is that I was the last one to join the team, so... Yes.
No, actually, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
Because you were just late enough to join that you're always picking up the last thing and always 2 weeks behind everybody else. Yeah. So it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But that happened level 4 too. Like your final block was the last one we put in. But it was all on schedule basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now we're at that point. And I think we're in a very good state.
Yeah.
Very satisfied with how.
So what's left to do for content, Steven?
In terms of content, what is left to do?
Well, the gameplay is designed.
Yeah.
The levels, the structure, it's all there.
Yep.
It's really about the widgets, the socks, the trinkets, the terminals,
so
all the bonus stuff.
There's a huge pass we need to do for all of these things. Like we've put in what we think makes a lot of sense in the moment at that point, where the widgets and all the additional things you can get are.
And in Widget Satchel, widgets are basically coins.
Yeah.
But the mechanic is such that everyone you pick up makes you heavier. Yes. So it becomes a...
So it's very important where we put them.
Right. We have to design a path for collecting a lot of them, but also for what Steven's been mostly interested in is finding a way to get the perfect path so that you can get all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a thing that's very important to Steven, I know.
Yes.
Is like, we can't make it... Because there are sometimes you get too heavy, then there's things you can't pick up.
Right.
And I think as you play the game the first time through, you might think to yourself like, oh, okay, maybe I could have gotten that earlier, or maybe I could have gotten this one or that one, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in truth, you can play widgets and get every single widget. It's just incredibly difficult.
Right.
And so designing that path through the levels, that's what Steven's got to do on his widget pass.
Yes. And I mean, in addition to that, there's still like art passes and stuff that like as the game has improved and changed as over the time, I'm sure there are some things that like some art things that have changed a little bit in earlier levels that don't make any sense now.
You know, that's been true.
Okay.
But I've been kind of changing that stuff live for the most part.
Sure. Okay.
A great example is a feature that we added for one of Ellen's blocks was this sort of like, it's like chain link fence object, which to sprocket is something you bump into, but for junk passes through. Mm-hmm. So it allows the mechanic of the sort of junk building in that one section to work, but also it becomes an interesting thing because you can also have some bots go behind it and you can add some more mechanical stuff to it. So that object was made for a thing in level 5.
Yeah.
But there was immediate opportunities to use it as a mechanic in earlier levels, but also as just decoration, just as art. Mm-hmm. So there's sections in level 2 where like a platform goes behind a wall. Well, that doesn't have to do that anymore. Now it goes behind the fence so that the player can actually see it, but also it can make more logical sense to its world. So I've been doing that as we've been going.
Ah, okay.
I'd like to think there's not a lot of that left. Sure. We'll see.
Yeah.
I also don't want to get like, it's so easy to just look at something and go, I can make this better. Mm. But like, I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
I have to stop myself.
Yep. You gotta eventually release the game.
Yeah.
Even though like there's always things you can add to it. You eventually you gotta stop.
Mm-hmm.
Design never ends. It just stops.
Yeah. Yes,
exactly. And then, you know, bug fixes and stuff, but Ellen will let us know what we need to fix.
And if any bugs get through, it's all Ellen's fault.
Pressure.
What went well during this whole push? Like, what did you enjoy about it? What do you feel satisfied with? I feel like I'm interviewing you now.
Crickets.
Well, I thought it was really cool how fast we could get levels done because of all the work that you guys did making the level designer tool that we've been using.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Yeah, I'm glad that it is, that levels are so easy to build now. With all of that work we did in the past.
Yeah.
Get it to work like that. We got a whole lot done because of that too. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah. And, you know, not like I've been in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, what happens when the game is out and if we want to do any DLC or anything like that for it? It's like, actually, we're pretty well positioned to make content for this game pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably have to build a system to you know, to finalize and deliver that type of content.
Yeah.
But without intending to, we're actually much better placed than we would have otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have thought that'd be too ambitious. I'd rather just move on to the next project. But if the game does well, if people want more content... We have an option now.
Yeah.
Because of the way we've built our workflow.
Yeah, totally. Also, I think project management in general went really well this push.
Yeah.
We had a list of things and we were able to keep that organized and stuff.
Yeah.
Which was great.
Well, and you know, we've been sort of all together as a team through this whole project trying to keep to-do lists and Trello boards and a rough process.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing Ellen on the team was nice because Ellen has the mind for it as well. I know it's not like your favorite thing, frankly, but we kind of sometimes put it on you to help us stay organized. And I think that was a help.
She made a face as soon as you said that.
Yeah.
Like, favorite? No, it is.
Yeah.
I do like, okay, it's fun to move Trello cards around. It's fun to move tickets around, you guys.
Yeah.
Especially when you're moving them to done. That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
It's really satisfying.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's nice. I don't know. I'm sure they think about this when they design the programs like that. But it's just nice to be able to see kind of your work all represented
mm-hmm.
in this place. And you can really look at it and talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the thing. I think that was one of the things that I thought really worked really well as well. Not just the Trello board that we were using and... You know, using Slack to communicate with each other, like when the weather was bad, what we're going to be working on instead.
Yeah.
But just the dialogue, you know, it's when everyone's really busy, I think it can be tempting to just kind of like pass things off. Like, hey, this is done. Now it's over to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, now this is done. Now it's over to you. And then just kind of go radio silent while you try to fit the next thing in.
Yeah.
But there was really great conversations and dialogue, I think, across the team throughout the last few months. And that's just great.
Yeah.
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 And what was nice is when we had those discussions, it was a lot of it was about how to get the thing done.
Yeah.
But a lot of it was also like we did more design work in these 2 months than I expected as a group. And that's been really nice. Like we talked about both Martha and Ellen's contributions to the sort of complexity of the systems, which has been really great. But also there was a couple of unanswered questions, like how does this work exactly?
Yeah.
And it was great to have a couple more people to weigh in on that.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked only because we'd already sort of established that communication that you were talking about. It made it easier to just add a couple things to it without burdening us a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. I'm also really happy about like the diverse level design that we've added into the game now mm-hmm. because in the past it was largely you and me, Mark, who was doing levels.
Yeah.
So Lane had done a few levels in the past and Sarah had done a couple levels too. But it was mainly you and me, so it was like our vision.
Yeah.
But then since we've added Ellen and Martha onto the team, there's been a lot more unique ideas. And like it makes the game feel larger
as
a result of that.
Oh, yeah. Really and good. Not even just in content, but just the variety is such that. And the strength about Widget Satchel, and I was concerned about this originally, is when we developed this block system, it was a workflow issue, mm-hmm. mainly. It was like we could work on things individually. You could have a start and end, and then when you stitch them together, you can make sure it looks nice. But yeah. like then you don't have to worry about what else is happening in the level. And that makes the game kind of episodic in a fun way. Mm-hmm. And so that's a cool design element, but also it made it kind of like a little, it could be samey, right? Yeah. Or elements could not, they wouldn't necessarily have anything to do with each other. And so it could feel like the same, but also not connected.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit of a worry. And my biggest concern actually was that each section would be small enough that there'd be no like time to just run around.
Yeah.
One of the things I think about when I think about like platformer games I love is there's always the challenge of like jumping from here to there. Mm-hmm. But in between, there's the three easy jumps.
Yeah.
Right? And those are not fun to design. that's more UX than level design, frankly.
Almost.
It's about giving the player like they need 15 seconds between this challenge and that challenge where they feel safe. Mm-hmm. And like that's hard to do with our block system. Because you don't think about the whole thing.
Right.
And so I was concerned about that a lot. But because we have a lot more diversity of structure and the episodicness of it is now a much greater strength than it ever was before. Whereas before it was a consequence and now it's a big like sort of strength of it. And we have done, we call it accordioning, where we stretch out sections a little bit. We've done a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we've also been designing blocks a little bigger to have those moments within them. Mm. And so that episodic thing is much more a strength than I thought. I thought it was going to be something like the game just as it's like, it's not the best part, but like we needed to do it that way in order to make the game work. Yeah. But now it's a huge strength of it. And I'm really pleased with that. And that is only true because of that more diverse content. That
right.
We have
yeah. There. Yeah. Otherwise it'd just be Steven. And Mark's game designs.
And weirdly, again, as a sort of strange result, is level one is real structured as like almost one thing.
Yeah.
It's very short and very, it teaches you some concepts. Level two is, it feels a lot more like that sort of samey thing with sort of accordingness. So it feels kind of very much of a piece with the little pieces. Level three is really puzzle oriented and kind of big and confusing. And that's the strength of it, in fact. Level four, because now we have this more stuff, it's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
And so weirdly, as a pacing element, we sort of stumbled into something really good where like that strength of the game, it hums in the background and then comes to life in level four in a way that like, really, we can't go redesign level three. We're just not going to do it. Yeah. Like, we don't have the capacity for it. Mm-hmm. But we do, because we, you know, it ends up kind of working out, you know?
Yeah, totally does.
Yeah. And level five is a fun grab bag. That's what I like most about. Yup. Yeah. All of you listeners are probably not going to have any idea the kinds of feelings we're describing, but like when the game is out and you play it, hopefully you'll get what we're talking about.
Yeah, you'll be able to feel it.
Yeah.
Maybe understand it intuitively.
Yeah.
Game design. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Also explosions.
Well, I think what went well, the thing is confirmed something that I've been with this whole project, which is we only have this much time. We only have this much effort. We're just going to make what we make. And it's going to be what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be what we wanted to make. you can't force it into shape.
Yeah.
You have to add to it. And then the shape it is the shape you lean into, right? Mm. So this is the game the way, I added this thing and now this is what the game is. It maybe wasn't what I wanted, but now that's what the game is. So the next thing I do is going to keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. And I always felt that would be a way for us to work quickly without feeling sort of random.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think we've confirmed that. That it has worked out.
Yeah.
And if I'm just fooling myself, then hopefully I can keep the illusion alive until the game is out.
Right.
Well, I think we had an agile way of working.
Yeah.
With a capital A.
Right, right. That might be just all I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's just that.
Well, yeah, but you know, if someone's going to debate what that means.
Capital A especially.
Capital A especially. But, you know, I think it was really helpful to have you, Mark, working full time on it because you've kind of been able to communicate the vision of what the game should be holistically, and you've been able, you know, you and Steven have been able to kind of stitch that vision together across the entire game.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, Martha and I came in like halfway through, or partway through level four. and we were, because of that unified vision that you had both developed and were holding on to and were able to consistently communicate, that we were able to work within that world that you'd created, but also still we knew where our boundaries were.
Yeah.
But then it wasn't a matter of control, right? It was immediately collaborative, and that's what agile really is being able to get the best ideas from that collaboration and bring them to life. Mm-hmm. Without slowing things down. And I think that's exactly what we all did.
Yeah.
And you know, interesting. It's actually really hard. Some people take a lot of training and a lot of money to figure out how to do that. But it was really cool to just kind of step into it.
Yeah. I think part of this being a passion project is helpful in that area. It's like, you know, we're the ones motivating ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. It's easier than when someone's paying you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. We learned a lot making this project too. A lot of things. Mark, you learned a bunch about optimization in Unity,
oh,
right?
Oh, man. Listeners may be familiar with my occasional rants about how terrible Unity is and its weird decisions. Unity is this incredible tool, and it's accessible, and the good outweighs the bad of so much, right? Mm. But it has so many architectural, what I feel are mistakes, and what do I know, right? But like lots of things from big choices they made about how how you approach like your first project, and to little things about how the API handles like collision callbacks and stuff. Like I'm running against all these terrible, terrible decisions that just drive me absolutely crazy, and I mean, of course, the truth of it is like it is what it is, and like you just learn it or do something else, right? Yeah. So it's the oldest lesson in the world. You just get familiar with it, and you're just more comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely where I've been. Is like this is the biggest Unity project I've ever done, and the first one where I've actually had to drill into like how this works, how it's built, and how I can actually optimize not just my code, but how the engine performs, and getting familiar with the way that the player works and how it works on different platforms, and really, really getting, and not in a way that I'd previously had to learn this stuff, which is with a lot of resentment behind me. But like, why do I need to just check this when I just do this way?
Yeah.
It's been a lot more satisfying and a lot less frustrating.
That's good.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that work is still ahead.
Yeah. Right?
But it's been quite nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm learning as proxy a lot of that kind of stuff. Just by being around, I get to hear about the physics engine and stuff. I mean, some of that also comes with hearing complaints.
A lot of it is like, Steven, get a load of this.
Yeah. But like, it's also very useful for me to know all those things. And I did, you're
a professional Unity developer.
Right. I get to take this stuff and get paid to do it more. So like, it's all valuable. I mean, I like using Unity a lot.
And yeah.
That's what all of my projects are in right now. So,
No, I carry with me the fact that I didn't start in Unity. That is something I just can never let go of. Mm-hmm. And so it always informs like the way I work. And sometimes it's actually quite helpful because I can think around an issue.
Yeah.
I'm using a totally different, I built a totally different timer system and a different event system than what Unity standard practices. And I feel a lot more comfortable, and I feel like the game is better for that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like a huge burden to just be like always thinking about how I would rather do things, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had never worked in Unity before.
Right.
I had worked with a group of game jammers a couple of years ago to try to start something in Unity, but ran into some technical issues and switched over to Twine. So really different. Mm-hmm. So I like everything that I did was something new that I was learning. Thankfully you guys set up such an intuitive workflow that it was easy to learn it. But working with the file structure was new, kind of working within the editor was new, being able to change and move the editor in a way that would help me work better was new and felt really cool. The cameras, working with the camera system was really hard for me. I tried it once. I tried it working it for a few hours and just couldn't get it. And so then I set it aside for a couple weeks and came back to it. And I did it, thanks to some patient coaching from Mark. Well, that was, I think, the thing that's going to stick with me. Kind of is the biggest learning curve, the thing that took the most effort.
Yeah.
It is wasn't
doing math with 19.2 and the other various numbers.
Yeah.
19.2, and having that epiphany was like, right, 19.2 is 1920 by 10. I'm an English major, you guys. So sometimes math, like in its very simple forms, is still amazing to me. So it was good. That I think was the hardest thing for me to pick up, but the whole thing was, it was a learning curve for me, but it was an enjoyable one.
Mm-hmm. I really want to hear from you when you do get your Unity group together to try to learn more, because that's one of the things you said you want to do this year.
Mm-hmm.
To hear like what you take, because working on Widget Satchel, it was a fully built project that mm-hmm. you worked within. And so I almost worry a little bit that it might actually hamstring you in certain ways. I mean, hopefully it'll give you more than it frustrates you. But like, I do want to hear back from you as to like what it helped you with and what it hindered you from.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I can imagine myself having the exact same conversations with whatever Unity thing that I'm working on next as you have with Unity itself.
Yeah.
Like, well, Mark and Steven did it this way. So... we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm a little, it's going to be a change, and that brings with it some challenge, but it have tried to start learning Unity from scratch several times, and it's big.
Yeah.
It's a big thing. So yeah, I think this will give me, it's going to give me the courage to start.
Yeah.
And really do it.
And I mean, that might be all you need.
Yeah.
Right. Cause yeah, it can be tough to like decide, like I'm going to peer into this corner of the program and that I never touched before.
Mm-hmm.
Like
there be dragons.
Yeah. Martha, you hate Unity almost as much as I do.
Yeah. But I didn't really have to deal with much of that.
Yeah.
More what I learned was like, I've never really done just pure level design before. So mm-hmm. it's fun, like trying things and being like, oh, that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. This doesn't work. Like I thought I would be able to like draw out stuff that worked, like designs on like a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And that didn't really work because... you have to actually be in the game to know like how far a jump will feel good,
right,
or how far you'll be able to jump when you're, you know, heavily encumbered.
Yeah, that's interesting, because when I first started working on, when we did it during the game jam, I drew out all of my levels before I did it.
You took a notebook and just hid in a closet.
I totally did.
And it was a productive workflow for a time.
And it worked, at the time it worked really well, but it does not anymore. And I think that the way you're working on it now, it makes way more sense just drawing it out in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Everything's tested like in engine as I was designing it. Mm-hmm. So you could see if it worked or not in the middle. Like, oh, wait, no, that's... that my vision doesn't actually work that way in real life.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, cool. What didn't go so well during this process? I know sometimes we don't want to talk about that stuff.
Yeah, air your grievances, people.
I mean, I know that right off the bat, it was hard to get everybody in together in the same space at the same time.
Yeah.
Because we all have different schedules and things.
Yeah, well, we can outline it. So the schedule we established was, and Steven and I had already been meeting on Tuesday and Wednesday evenings.
Thursday.
Tuesday and Thursday before we started this push.
Yep.
But the big change was that we were going to start to do full days on Saturdays.
Yeah.
And that was going to be something that was a little more regular and a little bit more sustained, because it's hard to spin up and spin down for like a 3 or 4 hour session. It kind of eats away a lot of time.
Yeah.
But we all had different... we could all commit differently to that.
Right.
So, Steven, you could only do every other Saturday to replace the time that you're devoting to Knights Games Club.
Mm-hmm.
But you were still meeting with me Tuesday, Wednesday. So that was a big chunk of time.
Yeah.
Martha, you were coming in just on Saturdays because your new job has you waking up at 6 in the morning.
Yes.
So you couldn't commit to any evening stuff.
Yeah.
And Ellen, you were coming in on Tuesdays and Saturdays. So it was a little bit like everyone had a slightly different. I was doing all of these because I had the time to do it.
Mm.
It was a little bit different, and then of course stuff just comes up every week.
Yeah, we live in Minnesota, so it gets cold and it's snowy, and the driving conditions are terrible, and all of those things, and sometimes you just cannot make it.
Right. So there's weather. I mean, we all got sick at least once.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
And then, other things happen, right?
Yeah.
Like everyone, you have other plans or whatever that take precedence.
Also, we did this during the holidays, which maybe wasn't the brightest
time. I remember we looked at the calendar and we're like, oh, look, so Christmas and New Year's are both on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
So that's fine. But both of those Saturdays don't get interfered with. And like, very naively, we thought it would be no problem at all.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So that was definitely
it was tricky, because I think the most valuable thing we all got together was just to like quickly make decisions as a group. Mm-hmm. That helped really well, and certainly to be able to say like, hey, I'm thinking of this. take a look at, oh, no, just do it that way instead. Oh, yeah. Of course, you're right. And then that we all would do that for each other.
Yeah.
And that's just so much easier when you're together. And so you lose a lot of that when you're not.
That's true. Yeah.
But I mean, so it was a difficulty, yeah. But I think we worked through it.
Yeah, for sure. Also, version control and Git, those kinds of things.
We had a little trouble there.
We had some trouble with that.
Wasn't too bad.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I know you and me have lost like work because sometimes they just didn't get committed or something. Because Unity and Git do not mesh.
Uh-huh.
They just don't work together. So that sometimes has happened. So we had to like redo things.
Right.
And we also had to set everybody up with version control. Which
yeah. And so part of the thing is we had to get everyone on the same version of Unity, which Unity updates its editor like every other week now. Mm-hmm. And constantly reminds you to update it. But we have to lock a version of Unity.
Yeah.
So that we would just so we could just like one not have to download new versions every week, yeah, right? Like just that is I'm a believer in updating things all the time as fast as possible. Like I'm perfectly comfortable doing that. But in this case, it would just would take time out of the day.
Yeah,
like that's just time I'd rather be working on the project. And so that was kind of difficult to make sure that everyone was on the same version and never updated it, right? And if you had another project going, you had to use a different version or whatever.
Right.
But also we had third party tools that weren't just part of the project, but were part separate. And a lot of this was because of console development. And so we had to make sure that, because if you didn't have that on your machine, then it would create problems because of it. And it was different. Each little piece that we had to add to our installation had different consequences if someone else didn't have it.
Yep.
And that had consequences with Git as well, where some of those files would get pushed up or wouldn't get pushed up.
Yeah.
And so it was there's more logistical troubles getting everyone on board. But once we all had it set up, it worked pretty well.
Yeah.
Right?
Are you using SourceTree? Right now,
let's
get...
No.
No, Martha's command line only.
Yeah.
Okay. And she does all that right. face and that voice whenever we mention it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I tried SourceTree because the computer I was using that was installed and Eurolich was like, just download it from there. And I was like, okay, I'll try it. And then immediately messed it up. And I was like, no, just give me the command line. Let me put the commit message in and it's will be fine. It's going to be fine.
And we had some difficulty because a lot of the UI in Widget Satchel uses layout groups, which is, for anyone who uses layout groups, you're already groaning because they're very inefficiently designed, but it's a really great feature. And the reason we do it is because all of our button prompts and menu items and stuff, it's all going to be localized. We haven't done any translation yet, but the system is built to localize it, which means they're going to be different sizes.
Yeah.
So we need to automatically relay out these objects when the text changes. And so that system's already built in, and those objects exist in all levels. And so the problem is that those layout groups are constantly refreshing, even when the content isn't changing. And so it will mark the scene as changed, and it will take objects sub-objects and save them if they're prefabs.
Yeah.
And so we would have all these, you'd make a Git commit and it would have like 15 things you didn't touch.
Yep.
And basically the reason it did that is because we were not careful enough in preventing that kind of thing. But it was so tedious to do that it was easier just to ignore those changes or to commit them anyway because they weren't really changes.
Right. And then sometimes I would oftentimes try to ignore those changes and then not commit things I needed to commit, and then you had to rebuild that.
It just puts more cognitive overhead on you. And I know, Martha, that was difficult for you because you're working in the command line, and so the interface just got more annoying to you, I imagine.
Yeah, and for some reason... Yeah, no, it wasn't that so bad, though, because it was I only ever worked in the .unity file, so I only ever had to commit that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I was touching things all over the project, so that was, maybe it was more a concern for me than anyone else.
I haven't had really any version control problems.
Okay, well, don't brag.
Also, Martha should get expert too, so she knows it.
Well, I don't know. Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. I mean, I've had to use some Git command line stuff at work now, and it's
hard.
You can do it.
I I've been doing
it's the best.
The weird thing about Git is there are like three, you do three things in Git.
Yeah.
And that's all you ever do.
Yeah.
And somehow it's still complicated.
Yeah. It's true, though.
Yeah.
You can do it.
I've definitely been enjoying, there's a feature of SourceTree I really, really like, which is viewing a log. You can log a file, and you can just see its entire history, which is really great when you're like looking for like an old implementation. You're like, oh, we took that out of that, but it would be a good way to do it, this other thing. I'm like, where do I find that code?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, it's gone forever. I'm like, oh, no, I'm pretty sure it's in this document or this document or this document. I'll just check the logs for all that, and you see the diffs for everything going back to the beginning of time. It's really quite nice, and that's one advantage of a GUI thing.
Yeah.
Well, I've been using at work this is a tangent.
Yep.
But at work, I've been using the IntelliJ, and part of IntelliJ's editor thing is the version control thing, where like if you've accidentally realized you've been working on the wrong branch, or you just want to move one change to another, a new branch, you can, like, it has its own stash functionality within its program. So it doesn't give any git commands, but it takes the code, puts it in its own little version control thing. And then when you want it again, you just be like, put those changes in.
Oh, it's like a little hidden clipboard.
Yes. That's a hidden clipboard. Yeah.
I love that.
I've been really liking that, because then I can work in like whatever I want and then be like, okay, all the changes to this file I actually want on this branch, and then I can make a new branch for it. And it's nice. Oh, anyway.
Cool. I had to do that a couple times actually, because I also didn't know how to use SourceTree. And I did take your Git workshop at GlitchCon, but that was a while back. I don't remember a lot of it.
And it was version one of that talk, so.
That was guinea pig. So I definitely messed it up a couple times locally, and then was like, how do I fix this? There's got to be something. What's this stash button do? Well, it's already broken, Ellen. Might as well fix it, or just try it out. If it's more broken, then Mark and Steven can figure it out. And nothing bad happened. So, I guess I also learned about how to use SourceTree for version control in addition to how to use Unity.
And I just learned that if something bad happened, you'd have just thrown it on us.
No. No. I would not have done that. Well, but there's a cool stash button.
Yeah.
In terms of like development we have left for Widget Satchel, I think it's a lot of it is bugs, and then like those passes that we were talking about earlier.
Let's go over the Trello board, people.
y'all don't want to hear all that.
Yeah. No, I think there's a couple things. One is I need to revamp a little bit of the save system.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So that it works across consoles. Mm-hmm. It's working pretty good on PC now. There's some UI stuff left, not a ton.
Yeah.
That's what I'm working on this week. There is there's an achievement system in the game. We call them feats, so that they work on all platforms if they have an achievement system or not.
Yeah.
You know which platform I'm talking about. we need to implement some of the hooks to collect that behavior. And we also we should probably all talk a little bit, maybe one more time, about just nailing down that list of achievements.
Yeah.
I worked it up a while back, and I think Steven, you said they were all good, but I think one or two of them could probably change to something to leverage a little bit more of the design stuff that's been done since.
Yeah.
But that feels like a half hour meeting. We can figure that out so that then I can feel free to go actually implement them. Once I get everybody's stamp of approval on that. Sure. I don't know. Then it's a lot of just optimization again. Finishing up, there's those passes. We got to do a widget pass. We have to do so in the game, there's collectibles, socks, trinkets, and terminals, which are little areas you find and get a little bit of lore from the game. Mm-hmm. We have to do a little bit of that.
Yeah.
There's a section that Martha inspired called Martha's Junk Emporium. and we have a robot who is the proprietor of Martha's Junk Emporium.
Yes.
We need to write dialogue for that robot.
Right.
Should be relatively simple. So these are all little tasks, I think, and then a couple of things that feel little and will grow as we start them.
Yeah. Well, the widget pass is no small task.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's going to be. I think what that's going to be is going to be a partnership between Steven, you, and Ellen. You lay it out, because a lot of times you'll lay it out and then I will take a look at it and then I'll have my own views on it or whatever. But I think that'll probably gum us up a little bit. I think it's probably better for you to have it and then Ellen to tell you, no, fix it, and then you to fix it, and then Ellen to say, yes, that's fixed, and then that'll be...
Yeah, that's good with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that scares me, to be honest.
Yeah.
That whole thing.
Yeah. But I think the biggest thing is doing all the sound effects stuff. That's probably going to take a little longer. We might have to we have to cut our ambitions a little bit for some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with that. That's the biggest one where I can't give a good estimate of how long that time that's going to take you and me, Ellen.
This is hard to know.
Yeah, it's hard to know.
You don't know until, it could take you a day or two to do 80% of what you need.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it could take you 2 weeks to do the last 20%. You just don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And there's enough steps in that process that we can't really estimate. And depending on what we do for, or what we choose for each sound, how much editing that stuff needs, and how much testing we need to do for it, or how comfortable we are just being okay with what we choose and what we go for, it's going to be a little tricky, but it should be okay.
Yeah.
Downer ending, guys.
No, we'll figure it out.
We can do it. And then you can buy the game.
And then you can buy the game.
Yes. Oh, there we go. That's what we should talk about. Plans for release.
Yeah.
We announced in the last episode that we were planning on releasing it sometime in April on Switch and PC.
Yeah.
And then on Xbox and PlayStation in the coming future. After
yes.
that.
Sometime later.
Yes.
At a more comfortable pace.
Right. Yeah.
We'd like to release it. This isn't an official date, mm-hmm. but our goal is, and I feel really comfortable talking about all this because we don't have a marketing budget. We're not doing the thing where you keep secrets about it. Like, this is just a game we made and we're putting it out. Like, it's not. But we'd like to release it on April 2nd. And one of the reasons that feels like a good time, but also April 2nd just happens to be National Ferret Day.
Oh, yeah.
And so we might be able to get a couple of blog hits out of that. Feels like a slow news day, right?
Yeah.
So we're trying to be a little savvy, but we may end up having to slip that day, and so be it.
Yeah.
But for release plans, it really is about whatever natural marketing we can get. And this is definitely a case where like we could put a lot of effort into doing marketing, we put a lot of effort and money.
Yeah.
But truthfully, we just are only able to put a little bit of both. And then we have to be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
I've been trying to tell myself that because it's super easy to get really excited mm-hmm. and be like, let's buy a bunch of Facebook ads and let's do a bunch of this and that. And some of that will work, right? Mm-hmm. Like it could actually work.
Yeah.
But the truth is we got to finish the game and then I've been gearing myself to be comfortable not putting as much effort as I could. And some of that stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. And hopefully people listening can relate to that, where you decide, like, I could do it, but it would mean then I can't sleep for 3 weeks and I drop off another project and I don't see any of the people in my life.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm deciding not to do that instead.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. Other things are important.
Right, right. That said, if any of you at this table disagree and would like to do a lot of marketing effort...
No
takers? All right. Fair enough.
Well, cool.
But we're going to rely on word of mouth. We will hopefully the game. We know the game plays well. Mm-hmm. We're pretty confident in it. Mm-hmm. I think I'm modestly optimistic about how it will be received. I feel like the game feels a lot longer than I feared it would be. I felt it would be a pretty short game, and I was a little worried about that. But I feel like it'll be a meaty experience for most players.
Yeah.
And the replayability I think is going to work really well for the certain type of player.
Yep.
And so hopefully it catches fire, but like that's a very naive hope, I understand. But you know, maybe our listeners can help us out with that. If they like the game, they can spread the word as well.
It's always in the back of your head when you're making a game. Like, probably not going to be great, but like it could be.
Yeah.
It could be huge.
Right. You have to be, we talked about this before, about when we talked about, we had a show on ambitions.
Yeah.
And about how like you have to be modest, but also not so modest as to give yourself an out.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because you risk a lot of emotional trauma when you invest and expect so much.
Right.
And so it's really easy just to expect nothing and get nothing and be fine.
Yeah.
And really, you can't really live your life like that as a creator because then, you know, why are you making stuff?
Can't live your life like that, period. You got to put yourself out there sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
So somber reflections all around.
Yeah. Yes.
Explosions.
Explosions.
Yeah. I know I do want to have a boss trailer. That's one thing I know we can do because I can do video stuff. Oh,
so. You said boss and I was like, we have bosses and widgets?
No, no, no.
Surprise.
Boss rush. Go.
That's our show. If you haven't already, subscribe to Nice Games Club in your favorite podcast app and be sure to give it a good review if you liked it or are nice like us. We really do need to know you're out there. So leave a review and tell all your friends too. We also want to hear directly from you, so follow us on Twitter and all the other things at Nice Games Club. Let us know how we're doing, send us your topics, and ask us your questions. Lastly, you can find out more about the show, your nice host, and our nice guest. Nope, that doesn't work.
We have a guest here.
Does work.
See, Ellen is so a part of the team.
I just, yeah.
just
she's one of our nice hosts today.
That's how I
am. She's a guest and a host.
Guest and a host. Ghost.
She's a superposition of guest. Wait, what?
I said ghost.
Oh, sure.
Ghost, yeah.
She was dead the whole time.
You can find out more about your nice hosts and our nice ghost.
As well as get all the links and notes for this and other episodes at nicegames.club.
It's nice to be back, you guys. So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.